my town, your town. No, Zoom town, Zoom town. My town, your town. No, Zoom town, Zoom town. Your town, my town. No, Zoom.
Okay, hello, and welcome to another episode of Zoomtown. I'm your host, Travis Mateer, and today I am going solo, seeing how long I can just talk into the microphone. My host, Tim Adams, was not able to make it today, and I gave him all of like 5 minutes notice this morning that we needed to record something, and lo and behold, he has a life outside of doing a podcast for no financial compensation. So Tim, I hope you're out there driving safe today. It is kind of cold and blustery outside. It's March 28th? Let me check. No, March 29th. Monday, March 29th, 2021. And today, I'm going to be talking about, well, we're going to use an article that came out on NBC Montana last week that I wrote about at the blog as a starting point. And it's an issue that I am very, very familiar with from my time at the Poverello Center, an emergency homeless shelter in Missoula, at which I worked 7 years. And then Missoula Aging Services, I worked there for 3 years up until March of 2020. And Missoula Aging Services is an area agency on aging. So every county across this vast land of America has a type of agency that manages different funding. Sometimes they run programs like Meals on Wheels. That's a very familiar program. And so I worked there for 3 years. And the topic, I don't think I've actually specified what the topic is. The topic is basically dementia patients, people with Alzheimer's, inappropriately ending up at our state hospital. That is the starting point that we are going to be using to allow me to talk for however long I'm going to be able to talk. And let's get to that article now. So, lawmaker seeks change for Alzheimer's dementia patients at state hospital. This was written by Brady Brewster, came out Thursday, March 25th. I will include a link in the show notes. Excuse me. And it starts off as this. Montana Rep. Danny Tenenbaum from Missoula also works as a public defender. About a year ago, a case came across his desk that caught his eye. And this part is a quote. For me, it was a problem I didn't know existed until a year ago when a case came through our office. He said, a person was committed involuntarily to the state mental hospital and they weren't mentally ill. They just had Alzheimer's. Okay, so I'm going to stop right there. And for a frame of reference, I guess, what this article is going to eventually get to is the fact that hopefully some money is going to be available to study this at the state level for the next 2 years. With the idea that in 2023, the next time the state legislature convenes, they will look at trying to do something to address what this specific issue hints at. And really, this is kind of the tip of the iceberg. And what lurks beneath this one incident is a real huge, vast, dangerous thing if you claim to care about vulnerable populations like Democrats do, and if you claim to be fiscally conservative and concerned about the pocketbook issues, which Republicans do. When it comes to this issue of how we help people with cognitive conditions and sort of the insurance and the money and the social stuff all wrapped up in this, it really puts both parties, puts their rhetoric into the category of what I would call bullshit. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of well-meaning rhetoric out there that, you know, people want to try and do better. But coming from a person that spent 10 years working in the nonprofit world in Missoula, working very intimately and specifically with people with cognitive issues, oh, man, I don't even know where to start. One thing in terms of the quote from Danny Tenenbaum is that the person that ended up at the state hospital just had Alzheimer's. Now, I don't know anything about this specific case, but one of the challenges that I came across in trying to get help for people at both both the shelter and at aging services is when things like alcohol addiction are a part of the case or part of the person's maybe barriers to services is what I would say in the nonprofit work I used to do. Maybe this person did just have Alzheimer's, but oftentimes there is a lot more going on than just Alzheimer's. And Alzheimer's and other dementia-related cases are just so challenging because the way that they sort of present can be very unique to the individual. And other things can also come into play. Urinary tract infections, you know, something like that can actually have a huge impact on behavior that might get misconstrued as, you know, dementia-related stuff. I mean, all kinds of things can go on. And so the first thing I would do in looking at a difficult case from the social services perspective would be to see, like, what else was going on, what social supports existed. Oftentimes when a person gets to this desperate situation of ending up in a state hospital, which is totally inappropriate for a dementia patient, a lot of failures have been happening. A lot of passing the buck has been happening. And so plenty of blame to go around, usually. Continuing with the article, Tenenbaum said, in the state of Montana, the law regarding involuntary commitment to the state hospital is ambiguous. The Montana State Hospital, located in Warm Springs, houses 124 patients, according to their latest census. Most of the patients are committed for schizoaffective disorders and other types of mental illnesses. So, the law regarding involuntary commitment, man, this is something that is one of the most frustrating things that I came across, especially in my work at Aging Services, because I don't know how ambiguous the law actually is. It's obviously up for how it's interpreted by entities like the Missoula County Attorney's Office. And so as a service provider, I would say, okay, if a person is presenting a danger to themselves or others, is there not more that can be done on an involuntary basis to get this person help? One case that comes to mind that I had a chance to speak to Danny Tenenbaum last week, and he's not ready to speak publicly about it because he's very much learning more and really wants the next couple of years to be an opportunity to study in a very nonpartisan manner, since this affects anyone that's aging, any family out there usually has a story. So he really wants to do more learning before he goes more on the record and talks about this issue, which I totally respect. But I did have a chance to talk to him, and I asked if he was familiar with a case that I worked on that touched the Missoula Public Defender's Office, and he doesn't work out of that office, and so he wasn't familiar with this. But this case involving a person who is now dead, she died, 99% sure she passed, but I'm still not going to use her name. This case was extreme in terms of nothing being done to protect this woman and to protect the people and creatures around her. So animal control knows about this woman. I'm sure if anyone from animal control listens to this podcast, they will know exactly who I'm talking to, because they saw the dead cat rotting on the floor of the bedroom. They captured some of the cats that were in the walls. They went into this house that was just in an unspeakable condition. I didn't see the house myself. I had colleagues at Aging Services that did see the condition. And it was terrible and awful. And the woman had a dementia-related condition. I don't know if it was an actual official diagnosis. She also had alcohol addiction issues, and the alcohol issue tends to be a very, very difficult thing. And in terms of passing the buck and not wanting to necessarily involuntarily commit someone, the alcohol plays a role in which basically the county attorney's office can say, well, we don't want to get in the business of legally holding people accountable for decisions they're making, even if they're bad decisions. So if your dad smokes cigarettes and that's killing him, and he's got COPD and he still smokes cigarettes. We're not going to involuntarily commit him or do something. Oh, excuse me. Just hit the desk here. We won't do something to involuntarily commit this person because he's an adult. He's making his choices. And so an ability for someone to make poor choices is this fallback position that I've run across in my experiences with the entities that might be able to hold people accountable or keep people safe, you know. And it's just a significant challenge. A lot of times families, you know, have a lot of baggage in it. And at this point in a person's life, as they're aging and they have a cognitive disorder and they're declining, the amount of baggage usually that exists, if there is still family around, which sometimes there's not, can just really provide so many challenges that really we're at this crazy disadvantage in a lot of ways to do more things proactively. One of the things, I'm going to lift this microphone, it keeps on. Okay, let me just do some adjustment. One of the things that I was hoping to do as I transitioned from working at the shelter to Missoula Aging Services is I was hoping to get more upstream on some of the things that I saw happening at the shelter with people that really needed to be in nursing homes, but for whatever reason, you know, were not. To better understand the upstream decisions that were happening. And I was hoping to be able to be more effective and do more preventative stuff. But really, after 3 years at Aging Services, one of my takeaways is Montana is so incredibly broken and disadvantaged in how we are dealing with this vulnerable population that, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what can actually change it at this point. But let's actually get back to the article, because there's a few points that I'm going to be getting to about the exciting definitions of Medicare versus Medicaid. I know. You're going to be just waiting for that excitement to come. But just hold off. So let's get back to the article. Let's see. Okay, so the state mental hospital is home to people with mental disorders, but also some people who have committed very dangerous crimes, all the way up to murder, Tenenbaum said. He said at last check, around 40 patients at the hospital did not have a mental illness, but Alzheimer's or a related dementia, which are incurable and can't be treated through psychiatric treatment. This is not where people with Alzheimer's belong, he said. I agree. Tenenbaum added, it's hard to find a facility that specializes in dementia care in Montana if you don't have good insurance. There are only two options in Montana, one in Billings and another in Helena. If you can't afford a care center, the patient could end up at the state hospital. Okay, so let's see how to touch on that quote. One of the challenges in Montana is that most of the nursing homes, the skilled nursing facilities that have memory care unit capacity, a lot of them are run by the Goodman Group. And one of the challenges is that, you know, any business, corporation, and I'm not going to say this to slander it. I'm trying to keep some of my personal opinions and rants out of this particular episode. But in terms of liability, you know, a nursing home can be sued. So they have to look at risk mitigation when it comes to liability. And a big challenge is if a person becomes violent because of their cognitive issues or because of whatever is happening that might lead to a violent outburst. And that violent outburst is something that's gets on the chart. And I mean, that really can impact a person's ability to go to a facility. And since we have so few facilities statewide in Montana, then if you get 86th, quote unquote, that's sort of a slang term. If you get banned from a Goodman Group home, you can get banned from all of them, from my experience in some of the clients that I've worked with. And then where do you go? Where do you go? One of the most extreme cases, and this is just highlights some of the insanity that happens. There was a case back when I was working with the social workers at St. Patrick's Hospital where there was a man and he was a quadriplegic. I'm not sure exactly how he ended up a quadriplegic, but he was a quadriplegic and he was also a violent offender, right? And so anyone working in the homeless world knows that violent offender status can really impact your housing choices. Well, same thing in a skilled nursing facility, or, you know, if you're trying to discharge someone who's now a quadriplegic. This person stayed at the hospital for over 365 days. if you're familiar with the cost of being in a hospital, inpatient hospital, an entire year in a hospital because there was no place to discharge this person. No facility would take them. And I know the social worker didn't look in just Montana. They looked regionally. They looked in the Pacific Northwest. And a lot of times that's what some of the social workers are doing in these hospitals to find discharges, is they are looking outside of Montana. What makes Montana uniquely shitty when it comes to getting help for vulnerable populations like this? Well, let me tell you, this is where we're going to get into the exciting world of Medicare versus Medicaid. And I have official definitions. That's right. So Medicare is the federal health insurance program. And I'm taking this straight from the Medicare.gov website. And the Medicare, it's not just for people who are 65 and older. It's for those people. And it's for certain younger people with disabilities and people with end-stage renal disease. Medicare is not Medicaid. Medicaid is different. And if we go to the glossary for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, that's a different website than the Medicare.gov website. We can look at their official definition for the term Medicaid. And so the definition for Medicaid: Medicaid is a joint federal and state program that helps with medical costs for some people with low incomes and limited resources. This is the key part. Medicaid programs vary from state to state. Okay, they vary from state to state, but most healthcare costs are covered if you qualify for both Medicare and Medicaid. Okay. So what does that mean? That means, in a state like Montana with a little over a million people, the amount of money we have for our Medicaid program statewide is significantly less than a state like Washington or Oregon, where there are millions and millions of people. I came across this so much working at Missoula Aging Services because, oh man, people would be relocating or bringing mom and dad, or just mom or just dad, or bringing a family member from one of these mythical lands called Washington and Oregon, where the Medicaid services flow like honey from the springs of Valhalla. Obviously, I'm exaggerating, but coming from the perspective of a Montana service provider, when I heard the description, oftentimes on the phone, since I worked in the call center at Missoula Aging Services, they're like, well, I just got dad here, and you know, we need to get Medicaid going. He needs in-home services, and you know, yada yada yada. The reason why this was so significant is because the variation from state to state oftentimes can be income limits for eligibility. So the way that would work, I know in Montana, if you have over $2,000 in savings, right, then you are too rich for Medicaid. And the way that can work is basically if you know you need in-home services, so you need a health provider to come into your home to help you maintain your independence, but you need help with what we call the ADLs, activities of daily living, then you're paying out of pocket for those services until you become poor enough to be eligible for Medicaid. So the $2,000 income limit in Montana is specific to Montana, and can be a significant barrier to getting help, getting into a skilled nursing facility that's appropriate. Okay, so let's get back now to the article. Okay, I think we're gonna start talking about money here pretty soon. Okay, so after talking about the difficulty in finding a facility that specializes in memory care, the article continues, according to a recent study, it costs more than $500 per day to care for a dementia or Alzheimer's patient at the state hospital. That adds up to more than $188,000 per person per year, and more than $7.5 million per year to house for 40 memory care patients. Tenenbaum and other supporters are tasking the Health and Human Services Committee with 2 years of research to study how the state can better care for people with Alzheimer's. Tenenbaum said it's not a one-size-fits-all bill and will take many contributors to find the right litigation to propose at the 2023 legislative session. Okay. One of the ideas that probably wouldn't get traction, but I think needs to, is what I would call, let's use a non-professional term since I've been sounding so professional with all my fancy terms. Some kind of like, you know, drunk nursing home. You know, there's a drunk tank sometimes for people with alcohol related, you know, criminal offenses or are facing when they're out of control, right? You know, the alcoholics that are able-bodied, if they survive long enough, they become old, decrepit alcoholics with a failing body and a failing mind. Oftentimes, I mean, dementia can be the result of alcoholism. Wet brain. And we need a facility where people can just drink. Not like crazy drinking, but they can be allowed to drink. If that's the barrier, they want to continue their habit, but they're so cognitively declined, but not bad enough that the county attorney is willing to do involuntary commitments and there's no facility. I mean, we need to work with some of these people. And honestly, at this point, it would be a humane, fiscally conservative thing to do, to find and create some kind of nursing home. I don't know how you deal with the risk mitigation with all the liability, but it is just absolutely insane what we do to punish people. And we punish people with alcohol addictions when that is an aspect of their cognitive decline as they are aging. I remember this guy at the shelter, and he's also probably dead. But I'm not going to use his name. And I saw this guy go from being a complete asshole who was pretty physically aggressive towards his female partner. She ended up leaving him, and he was all alone by himself with his brain slowly deteriorating. And so I saw over a period of time, I saw his cognitive decline, and it was alcohol related, and he was an asshole. But at some point, if he's still alive, you know, some amount of money is going to be expended by our various systems to deal with him. And he was finally able to get into a facility in Missoula. I think I'll not say the name of the facility, but because it's changed a bit since I worked with this client. But God bless this facility. As weird and kind of bizarre as I think the dynamics were, he was allowed to have, I think, one or two beers a day. And that really was the thing that kind of, you know, allowed him to stay there for a short amount of time. And this guy was gone. I mean, I went and continued visiting him to do some follow-up. And at one point, there was a knot in his curtain that he thought looked like a bird. He actually thought it was a bird, and he was talking to it like it was this his bird friend. And I was glad that he had a friend, honestly. It was nice. I'd also seen him before he got into this place being taken advantage of. He was in this apartment, and his case manager was not effective, and his neighbors realized this guy could be taken advantage of. And I found him stuck in a barbed wire fence at one point. I mean, this is the kind of ridiculous stuff that was happening. And you know, he was able to stay in this facility because they worked with the fact that he still wanted alcohol, and he would prioritize alcohol over a roof over his head. I mean, that's the drive of addiction when it comes to some of the people that I was familiar with. So why can't we have a facility like that just more appropriately works with people with addiction issues? You know, I've done things when it comes to alcohol to get people with failing bodies out of the state of Montana or out of Missoula. One situation, oh my goodness, this guy. This guy was infamous, okay? And as an alcoholic, former professor at the University of Montana, real motherfucker, okay? And I can say that now, and you'll know why, this guy, right? But I can't just, you know, wash my hands of someone in the official capacity that I was working at the time. But this guy was phenomenal with his manipulation and how he would sabotage stuff. We did so much to get this guy into a facility in Missoula. Okay, we did a lot, convincing, of talking. You know, I think it lasted 48 hours. And he was back on the sidewalk of the Pavarella Center, the new facility, right? And when I run across this guy after doing a lot of work, okay, And I'm talking, getting him some, no, the new clothes came after. Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. So he's on the sidewalk and he is talking to a concerned Missoula citizen. And this concerned Missoula citizen got out of his truck and started kind of getting aggressive with me, demanding to know why he couldn't be helped. This guy was the guy that was aggressive, was really close to, I think, like throwing a punch at me. I mean, I was in my fight or flight sort of defensive mode, getting ready to have to call the police or something, because I'm not a fighter. I don't fight. But I had to explain to this guy, listen, I can't tell you what's going on with this person. That's, you know, I can't, but, you know, we're doing the best we can. And some people we just can't help. He didn't really like that, but he realized that he wasn't going to get any more information from me. So after this guy left in his truck, I go to the client and I'm like, okay, so-and-so, what happened? He's like, well, they kicked me out. I'm like, okay, why'd they kick you out? He's like, I had an accident in the bed. I'm like, that, and they kicked you out because you had an accident in the bed. And you know, he said that was the case. And I told him, I'm like, you know, I'm going to call and I'm going to find out what the story is. So if that's what you're saying, okay, you know, we'll find out. Well, the story was, I think he was, this is how a person can sabotage a placement when they have a potential like personality disorder or, you know, some kind of stuff going on that's not just dementia, right? Because I don't think he was cognitively declined at this point to warrant what happened next. But I believe there was a computer there and he was accessing porn. So that was one factor. And he did something in the bathroom. I can't remember the specific incident, but it was like a safety issue. But the kicker was that he took his Depends diaper off on purpose and shit in the bed. That's what he did. Took off the diaper. He was upset about being held accountable. And he shit in the bed. And the facility was like, you know what? No, we're not doing this. This is like 48 hours. And he's, you know, access porn, shit in the bed. Like, nope, we're done. So I got it, right? I understood that. I'm like, okay, you know? And this is the point in which, you know, when we start denying services at the Poverello Center, it's with some of these types of clients, it's an effort to say, okay, we need something to come in and intervene because we're not gonna enable this individual any longer. It's not safe for our staff to deal with someone that like needs to be in a skilled nursing facility but can't because he likes porn too much and shits in the bed. Yeah, you know, what do you do? Well, my success with this client came when there was a distant family member in Helena, okay? I found this family member and I said, hey, you know, this has been the recent history of your family member in Missoula. These are all the facilities that now say, hell no, we're not taking this guy. Would you mind stepping up to the plate and doing the familial duty at this point? And when I got the guy to agree, this is where the clean clothes come in because he was not clean and we had to shower him up. Okay. Got the clean clothes on him. All right. And I took him to the bus stop and I physically helped him onto the bus. I mean, this is after getting his ticket, got him on the bus. Did I leave immediately? No, I didn't leave. Do you know why? Because I wanted to make sure that bus left Missoula with that motherfucker on it. All right? Oh, it's not very professional, Travis, to be using those terms. Okay, you know what? Yeah, that's the beauty of this podcast is I can do whatever I want. And I'm in here by myself trying not to rant. But let me just tell you, What kind of reaction I got when later that day I was at the ER of St. Pat's and I told them, not only did this client leave Missoula to Helena, where a family member was going to do whatever the family was going to do to deal with this shit show, and then I actually saw him leave. I got him on the bus and I saw him leave. I got claps. One of the nurses stood up so I could say, I got a standing ovation for getting this guy out of Missoula and somewhere else. So these are the kind of things that are going on before a person might end up at the state hospital with maybe a cognitive diagnosis and a whole host of other factors that have contributed to an inappropriate placement. Another situation, because we talk about, you know, how bad things have to get. It was great. When I started working at Missoula Aging Services, some of my coworkers, you know, they weren't familiar with some of these extreme examples. And let me lift my microphone up again. And so I kind of had to explain a little bit where I was coming from. And this came out when Ethan Smith, the crime prevention officer, was giving a presentation one day about some of this stuff. And, you know, and he wasn't able to get into some of the gritty details of like, you know, why things can't happen in a legal way with, you know, things like adult protective services and the sheriff's department, that gets involved sometimes with involuntary commitments or law enforcement, anyone and any first responder. And there's a gentleman, different guy, different older guy in a wheelchair that was around for an entire summer. I can't remember where he came from. Excuse me. I'm going to take a little drink of coffee real quick. Okay. And so this guy showed up and was in town for quite a while. I mean, this was most of the summer. He would drink, get pretty aggressive. And this guy was lighting fires in the ashtrays at motels. And so I was tracking this guy because I knew a lot of the motel managers, because the motel circuit's a whole nother part of the story. There's a lot of elderly people that should be in nursing homes that are in motel rooms. Okay. Those are the skilled nursing facilities, not. But I was tracking this guy because there were multiple fires popping up. He was starting fires. Okay, if it just happens once, all right, you know, maybe he, you know, didn't know what he was doing or something. No, there were multiple fires that were happening. So I was tracking him. I was telling motel managers about this guy. I was showing them pictures of him. Because at this point, I'm worried he's going to start some fires. It's going to be the middle of the night. The Sleepy Inn, the amazing manager at the Sleepy Inn that I worked with, she is a saint, absolute saint. She kept some people alive beyond what these more, you know, high-end institutions like the hospitals were doing. But she was one of the first ones to alert me to this guy because she ran him off after she saw him light the fire. And so we knew this guy was lighting fires. And we were trying to get this guy committed because there was some speculation, there was some mental health stuff going on as well. So it wasn't just, you know, it wasn't just like an Alzheimer's situation, but we needed to get this guy out of Missoula. And it finally got to the point where after all summer, I mean, this guy could be sitting in his own feces and none of this was bad enough. Okay. He wasn't harming himself enough, really for there to be any kind of legal intervention. But finally, a law enforcement officer who I talked to about this situation, he found this guy naked, covered in feces in the rain outside, pre-hypothermic. All right, and that was the combination of factors that finally led him to go to the hospital to have a medical reason to be admitted. I was involved in the case that where the judge involuntarily committed him. So these are the kind of things that are happening as we deal collectively with our collective institutional failure. Yeah. So I'll take a quick breath. I know there's some other things I was going to mention. I didn't really take any notes down. Let's see. This is my first solo show. I'll talk a little bit about the podcast, actually. You know, let's do that. I believe this is the 14th episode of Zoomtown. And if for folks not familiar with the Zoomtown term, it's kind of like Boomtown, like back in the day when gold was discovered and there was a boom to places. Well, Zoomtown is a modern update of that concept, because now with the pandemic and people realizing they can work remotely thanks to technology, nice places like Missoula that were already experiencing a lot of development and a lot of gentrification, now these places are sort of being hyper gentrified as people with money and the ability to come in here do so they can take advantage of the beautiful scenery, work remotely, and drive up the cost of housing. And so that is a reality. Oh, okay. Actually, I do have another example. I love anecdotal stories, and I was biking around. Did I mention this story yet? I may have. I forget who I talked to. But this is a good example of running across a older person flying a sign. So I was biking around the campus. I was actually trying to look for former professors or anyone that might want to fight for the humanities as it's being slaughtered by Seth Bodner. I didn't find any life on campus. It was pretty dead. And I was doing some of my old, biking around the old haunts back when I was a college student. And I saw a guy flying a sign by, what is it? By the Albertsons or Rosauer's, whatever. It's on East Broadway. And so I stopped and talked to the guy. I was interested in kind of knowing more where he was coming from. And he told me he came from Florida. So came to Missoula from Florida. I'm like, oh, okay. It's kind of cold still. I'm like, do you have any family in Florida? He's like, yeah, my family's in Florida. I'm like, okay, do you have any family in Missoula? He's like, no, not really. And my hackles get up as a service provider that would kind of assess a person, that was new to town. It's like, okay, where's your support system? Oh, Florida. Okay, well, your chances of getting into housing here are, shit. So, but the more I talked to the guy, the more I realized, this guy has been to Missoula before. He actually was familiar with the old POV. He knew some of the people. He used to work in I think he meant volunteer as he was staying there, but worked in the clothing room, knew some of the old volunteers back at the old POV, knew one of my good friends, Jesse, my coworker. And so, he'd been to Missoula before, and we had a nice conversation, and I just told him, hey, this is the situation in Missoula. The vacancy rate for rentals is, nil. All the factors that I would tell people about the just reality of getting into housing in Missoula. And this gentleman was a veteran. He was in a wheelchair. I don't know if he was wheelchair bound, but was in a wheelchair. And he had already talked to the right people. He was like 360 something on the housing voucher list, he said. That's what he told me. And so, the reality of someone that wants to stay in Missoula because it's a beautiful place, but they, are older and have disabilities. And I actually asked him about disability too, and his disability, he only got about $340 a month or something. So his chances of getting into housing in Missoula are pretty challenged, even being a veteran. But these are some of the kind of anecdotal stories that exist out there as Missoula hyper gentrifies and really becomes more and more unaffordable for even the professionals. There's of course the working, what's that term they use? Workforce housing, because the people living on passive income want to make sure that they have good people making their lattes for them, got to get those baristas, which most of those baristas have master degrees and various, So that's kind of where I'm coming from in a solo conversation about this very important issue that really, I think, exposes the inability of fiscal conservatives to be fiscally conservative and the inability of people claiming to protect vulnerable populations to actually protect those vulnerable populations. And so it would be nice if in the next 2 years things could be done to actually find opportunities to address some of these situations. But what can you do with a million people and limited Medicaid funds and efforts to, spend scant resources to do things like drug testing? The idea of drug testing people on Medicaid is so offensive to me because it takes the fiscally conservative argument and just blows it up, because it costs money, to drug test people, and you have to pay for those tests. You can't just magically just get them out of nowhere. For the idea of actually spending money to do something like that, when at the same time we're punishing people with alcohol-related dementia issues and a lifetime of poor choices. So I don't know how that can actually change. One of the things that needs to change is just a better understanding of the problems. So many people I talk to at Missoula Aging Services, so many family members, you don't know any of this until you actually are neck deep in a complete crisis. And when you're in a crisis, that is not the time to be understanding the legal definitions of involuntary commitment and, you know, what power of attorney means and why you should have gotten it before the person lost their cognitive functioning. You know, those are the kind of situations that arise so frequently because people don't necessarily want to think about the aging process, which we all do, and they don't want to think about death, which, hey, we all die. It's a part of the deal down here. I'm tempted to go on some metaphysical life after death thing, but that is not the topic. We're trying to stay focused, Travis. It has been about now 40 minutes. So I was going to see if I could stretch it to a full hour. I want to try and log in an hour, but I'm not sure what I can do for the next 20 minutes. Let me just do a little thinking, a little pondering. Because I know there's some other anecdotal stories. Okay, yes, the stealing the homeless woman pants story. Okay. Yeah, I definitely need a drink of coffee before I talk about the benefit of this, of the theft of a homeless woman's pants. So this is probably one of the craziest stories, and I'm going to conclude with this one. Oh boy. For the record, I was not the person who stole her pants. That was not me. But this actually, okay, this is a great opportunity to talk about a couple things. So this client, I don't know if she was in her 60s by the time that I started working with her, but she was pretty notorious in the first responder world. I don't know if she's still alive. So again, not going to use any names, but I guarantee these forces of nature I am discussing are real people with real world impacts on the world around them, like on me. So this client was a frequent flyer in the ER. I mean, there were months where she was probably in the ER 20, 30 times easy. Med seeking was sort of a part of it. I don't know if it was like benzos. I think anti-anxiety meds were kind of her thing, because I would find her sometimes in motel rooms on the floor, unable to get up, with like blue around her lips. I think that was like abusing benzo phenomenon. Not blue like lack of oxygen blue. But this client was pretty notorious, and it actually was a public defender who had somehow acquired the payee status. And so this person was the official individual involved in distributing her money. So he didn't really think that it was beneficial to do what we call a Medicaid spend down, right? And so a Medicaid spend down, if you're over the income limit, there's like a monthly income limit for Medicaid, for different Medicaid programs. This all gets so confusing. And then I'm also hitting the desk. But so for this particular Medicaid program we were trying to get her on, that would be able to pay for case management, so pay for someone to kind of help her navigate these systems, there was a spend down that was required. And so because the way Montana has different Medicaid programs set up, you know, if someone makes the princely sum of like $900 a month, well, you know, I think the income limit was set at like 740 something. And so the difference is the spend down, right? You're getting $900. You're too rich for Medicaid. You need to spend like $150 or $200 to bring yourself down to be poor enough every month to be eligible for Medicaid. And so the person that was acting as the payee didn't see the benefit of doing the spend down. Therefore, her Medicaid was never activated. Therefore, she could never get case management or any kind of official help. So she would just bounce around in motels, in the ER, at the shelter. You know, plenty of people were taking advantage of her first of the month when she would get all of her money, which the payee just gave her all the money first of the month, like an idiot. So a couple factors changed, and one big factor was a different payee. So a different payee was assigned, and here's where the pants kind of comes in, all right? So for people in the social service, you know, health insurance world, will understand that in order to get Medicare, not Medicaid, so now we're talking about Medicare, in order to get Medicare to cover the costs of a recovery in a skilled nursing facility, you need to be admitted to a hospital as an inpatient, so not observer status, right? That's a trick they play. You have to be admitted as an inpatient for 3 days. And if you're in the hospital for 3 days as an inpatient, that triggers Medicare to cover, usually I think it's up to 90 days, depending on your actual medical need, a short-term stay in a skilled nursing facility, right? So the plan was to stop this cycle of madness where this woman would be abusing prescription medications and presenting in the ER 20 to 30 times a month. In order to stop that shit show, a plan was devised. And the plan was, if she's at the ER and there's a medical reason to admit her to the hospital, then we do everything we can to keep her there for 3 days so that some more time in a skilled nursing facility to recover can happen. I mean, this had happened a few times and she got itchy and wanted to leave, and you can't prevent her from leaving, technically. So knowing that plan had failed a couple times, we were pretty serious this last go around, and this was years ago, that it was going to stick this time. And so day two, she's getting kind of a little squirrely, you know, wanting to leave the hospital, even though you got food and Jell-O and TV, great staffing, you know, all your needs met. No, not all your needs met. She wanted to do what she wanted to do. But thankfully, the new payee, in a moment of desperation and inspiration, decided to steal her pants. And she told the client, sure, okay, you can leave, but you do so with no pants. No pants, right? The gambit worked. It worked. It actually did. No pants meant not leaving the hospital, meant 3 days were achieved, meant Medicare covered the cost of, I think it was Missoula Health and Rehab. I will say that she went to that place. And I believe stayed there. So I check in on some of these clients that I remember with folks that are still kind of familiar, and I never got any reports of her after that moment leaving. I did talk to her a couple times while she was at the facility, and she was grouchy and grumpy, but you know what? She was not passed out on the floor of a motel room getting taken advantage of by her quote unquote friends and abusing benzos until she died. So that was something that was a success because of creative outside the box thinking. And really, the stealing the woman's pants story, I mean, that anecdotal story is one of the most absurd, ridiculous examples that I can provide of what happens, of what this system puts people like myself and this payee, like, puts us in these situations. It's insane. I mean, it's absolutely insane. But you don't know that until you're inside of a crisis. And unfortunately, we don't have a lot of good media that gets some of these stories out there. Such significant limitations in media. And with the recent story of the Missoulian shuttering the newspaper production here in town, so that moves to Helena, I believe, now. The media landscape in our Zoom town just continues to, you know, get suckier and suckier. Not this podcast. This podcast is still going strong. I don't have a sponsor or advertiser yet. You could be that advertiser. You could be that sponsor. You could be that support that I'm looking for to help keep this podcast going. Yeah, I'm going to keep doing the podcast regardless, but it is something that I would like to you know, step up the game a bit. So there's going to be some things that Tim and I are working on. I believe the candidate filing for the mayor race is April 22nd. And so kind of taking our podcast out to the streets and getting some interviews with people, citizens on the streets, is something that we're discussing. There's a couple of things that are going on in the works. So please continue to stay tuned. If you want to get in touch with me, you can reach me at willskink@yahoo.com. That's willskink @yahoo.com. You can check out my blog, Reptile Dysfunction. Still ridiculous every time I say it out loud, but for the moment, I am continuing to post regularly at Reptile Dysfunction, which is my WordPress blog. And so I'm pretty much daily posting stuff. Saturdays, yeah, you might get a poem, maybe not. But I have been very consistent, really, since the beginning of the year, posting almost daily. So you can always check out my work there. A lot of different other ways to support me. I've got a work of fiction on Substack, and so you just go to Substack and search William Skink. You can find the first part of my fictional story, Zula, is available to anyone. I will probably put up a paywall at some point. You can also buy my book, Welcome to the Covaxicon. And that's a book of poetry available at the Zootown Arts Community Center. So you can buy that online at the artist's online shop. And you can also purchase it in Missoula at the Loose Moose, one of my favorite stores. I found some great books recently. Actually, I found the book, what's his name? Sebastian Horsley, the brother of Jason Horsley, who I am very excited to be hopefully interviewing very soon. So, but you can find my Welcome to the Covaxicon book of poetry there at the Loose Moose. Please support local shops, local businesses. And I think I will just go ahead and leave it at that. Next week, another episode, even if it's just me and a microphone talking, there will be another episode of Zoomtown. This is Travis Mateer signing off for now. Ooh, and I just got a text. Adios.